Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. These days, if you want to sing someone else's song, you can just go to a karaoke bar and have at it. But in the old days, the 19th century, the first half of the 20th, if you wanted to sing someone else's songs, you'd buy the sheet music and learn it that way. Last time Stephen Merritt was here on Soundcheck, he had learned one of Beck's songs from that Songreader project that Beck did last year. Remember that? He released a bunch of new songs as sheet music and not as a recording. Well, Stephen Merritt, who's probably best known for his band The Magnetic Fields and his solo records, performed one of those Beck songs here in the Soundcheck studio. Today, Stephen is back with one of his other bands, Future Bible Heroes, and they have a long overdue new record and will play some of it for us live. But back to that karaoke idea. Everything I know about karaoke, I learned from watching Bill Murray in the film Lost in Translation.
I could feel at the time there was no way of knowing. Fallen leaves in the night, who can say where they're blowing?
So that's a karaoke version of More Than This, a song by Roxy Music, sung by Bill Murray. And actually, I'm exaggerating when I say that everything I know about karaoke I learned from this one film scene. I've learned quite a bit more from reading Rob Sheffield's newest book. For example, in Japanese, the word karaoke means empty orchestra, which makes sense. Without someone singing along, there's just an empty backing track. It's only when someone picks up the mic and adds the melody back in that the song becomes whole again. Karaoke and the idea of becoming whole again are at the heart of Rob Sheffield's new memoir. It's called Turn Around Bright Eyes, subtitled The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. Rob's here with me in the Soundcheck studio today. Good to have you back.
How you doing, John?
Good. I'm sorry we don't have a karaoke mic for you to hold. You have the radio mic hanging in front of you. Holding the microphone, the physical act of holding a mic, does something to people. It certainly does something to you.
Yes, especially if you're a non-musician and non-performer, actually holding the microphone makes you feel like a real singer, even if you're not one.
Quoting you from the book, the first time I sang karaoke, what startled me most was that it turned me into the sleaziest villainous you could ever encounter. I should say that you were watching a lot of Lifetime movies. It brought out my pushy, slutty, noisy side like nobody's business. Did that surprise you when that happened?
Very much so. I was into my 30s before I ever sang karaoke, and I know I have a terrible voice. I've always been someone who loves music, writes about music, but can't make music. And the first time I sang karaoke, sort of conquering that primal fear of getting up in front of people and singing, once that primal fear was gone, all these other doors opened up. Not necessarily pleasant to listen to doors.
nor doors that anybody was like sort of banging on, particularly the pushy, slutty, noisy Rob Sheffield. Speaking of, you know, empty orchestras making things whole again, this story picks up where your earlier memoir left off. Love is a Mixtape after the death of your wife at a young age. And this is you kind of putting your life back together. And karaoke is a big part of it. What was the first song that kind of opened all of these doors for you?
The first time I ever sang karaoke, the first song I did was Neil Diamond, and it was I Am, I Said, which is it's one of the great Neil Diamond songs because it's pretty talky. Uh-huh. You know, it doesn't challenge a lot in your melodic sensibility because it's got lots of dramatic pauses and breathing spaces, which are good.
Okay.
And it's kind of like low and growly, which suits my voice.
Well, I wish we could play Rob Sheffield's karaoke version, but you'll just have to settle for Neil Diamond.
Ellie is fine, the sun shines most of the time. And the feeling is laid back.
palm trees grow and rents are low, but you know, keep thinking about making my way back. Well, I'm New York City born and raised, but nowadays I'm lost between two shores. LA's fine, but it ain't home. New York's home, but it ain't mine no more. I am myself to no one there, and no one heard at all, not even the chair. I cry.
Neil Diamond and the song I Am, I Said. Singing that song at a karaoke night turned Rob Sheffield's life around in ways that are depicted in his new memoir called Turn Around Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. Were you a fan of this song before you sang it? Did you know all the words, etc.?
Yes, I felt confident because I knew all the words. I had that sort of non-musician but fan, so I felt I know this song. But singing it, I realized I didn't know it. There was a whole other world when you sing these songs. Just so much of the music becomes so much more vivid to you.
So it seems like, you know, it's not the kind of thing where talent. I mean, I'm going to ask you some pretty basic questions here, Rob, because I've never done karaoke and have no idea.
So much to look forward to.
But it seems like it's not talent that makes a good karaoke singer. It's you got to mean it.
Yeah, totally. Talent really means nothing. You know, it's all enthusiasm. It's all passion that you bring to it. And it's one of the beautiful things about karaoke is that it sort of creates this really accepting community in a karaoke crowd. You know, people, they don't necessarily demand that you can hit the notes. It's the verve that you bring to it.
All right. Listeners, tell us about your best or worst karaoke experience. You can give us a call at 866-939-1612 or leave a comment on our website, soundcheck.org. The voicemail line again is 866-939-1612. So do you have a worst karaoke? I mean, your book is full of like karaoke did this for me and did that for me and I met my wife and had all these great times. Ever a time where it just went south really fast?
Sometimes you begin a song and you realize once you get into it that it's impossible to sing. And that can be kind of it can be kind of humiliating. You have to accept your limitations. I once tried to sing David Bowie's Life on Mars at a karaoke bar, and I thought, again, I love this song. I know this song. I know all the words. And I didn't realize until I got to the
chorus.
This song is impossible to sing. And I said, wow, I am bombing on a cosmic level here.
Take a look at her. Is there life on Mars?
But, you know, you can't give up. You can't put down the mic and say, that was a bad choice. You have to just tough it out. It forces you to do that. Sorry, David Bowie.
Rob Sheffield's my guest on Soundcheck. We're talking about his new memoir, Turn Around Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. And asking you for your best or worst karaoke experiences. You write about, the kind of the karaoke bars, and there's people at tables, there's some people at bars, and then there are private rooms. Now, what does it mean to do karaoke in a private room? If it's just like you and your wife, how is that fun? I mean, there's got to be other people there, right?
Yeah, it's best if you get a group of people together, you know, maybe five or six people, and some karaoke places, they have the rooms where you could just sequester yourselves and just sing to each other for a few hours, and that's fun. But part of the karaoke experience is also just hearing strangers sing and being out and surrounded by this weird sort of impromptu community that gathers. And you have the strangest you know, heartfelt interactions with total strangers, just, you know, destroying a Hall & Oates song together. It's really strange.
There's another, again, forgive very basic questions here, but you write about, you know, sort of putting your name on a list and waiting to be called. So there's somebody, you know, if you're not doing the private room, there's somebody kind of running the thing and they're choosing who to pick and what song to pick when. Is that how it works?
Yeah, they're kind of keeping track of the list. And it's often the bartender who, you know, has a lot of other stuff to do. They'll have sticky notes on the wall, or you'll fill out a little slip with your song. And
you know that they have the song? You have to know that already?
Yeah, you'll look it up in the songbook to see what songs they have, and you write down the number.
Right, right. And you write in the book about, you know, you have a number of these, like, 6 and 7 digit numbers memorized.
It's
like,
yes.
All right. Is it the same songbook from bar to bar? I mean, if Ziggy Stardust is number 11778 or whatever it is in bar A, will it also be in bar B?
It's different every place. And you never know what songs they're going to have. I was at this place in Koreatown a couple weeks ago where they had all the 90s David Bowie and none of the 70s David Bowie. And I thought, hey, this is great. We're all just going to do songs from Earthling, you know?
Right.
We're all just going to jump, they say. And that was a blast.
So part of karaoke is that moment, which can drag on for hours, of expectation, waiting for your name to be called so you get the chance to hold that mic, right?
Yeah. And yet that's part of the experience, is that anticipation, is, you know, the way you people listen to each other. And I think that's really the essential magic of karaoke, is that, you know, if you want to hear yourself sing, you can sing in the shower, you know, you
right.
can sing in the car. We go to the karaoke experience because we want to be part of that audience and part of that community. And it's really like we come to make each other stars.
Mm-hmm. There's usually some lubrication involved as well, right?
There very often is, yes. Drinks getting spilled, yes. There's a lot of
drinks
that.
Drinks getting drunk.
Yes.
Yeah. So by the time your name is called, you might be 6 or 7 beers from having scribbled down that name
It often, a little
number.
Liquid courage sometimes helps.
Have you heard this new Jimmy Buffett song?
No.
It's all about karaoke nights at bars. This is Jimmy Buffett and Toby Keith. Take a listen to this. It's called Too Drunk to Karaoke.
If you ask me, hell, I killed that song. What they told me, you're too drunk to karaoke.
How can that be?
You don't have to be good, don't have to be refined, you just have to be a legend in your own mind. Don't have to rehearse or even sing off key, just prove that theory of drunk agility.
Jimmy Buffett with Toby Keith, Too Drunk to Karaoke. My favorite line is that even possible?
It's testing the frontiers of, yes, I had no idea.
Is there such a thing as being too drunk to karaoke?
I've never witnessed it, but that song really describes the experience well. Like, sometimes people think they're nailing the song, and you can see it's clearing the room.
Rob Sheffield's new book is called Turn Around Bright Eyes, a memoir of love and karaoke. It's funny, it's touching, and it's full of interesting facts about karaoke. Now, when Jimmy Buffett is singing about karaoke, you know that it's kind of like penetrated American culture
Sure. All
the way. How did that happen?
Well, it's weird because it was big in Japan for so many years without really making inroads into America, and it seemed once in the late 80s, early 90s, once people found out about karaoke, they really wanted to do it. It's really funny how fast it spread. Mm. It's funny that, you know, 20 years ago, karaoke was pretty much unknown in most of the U.S. And now any town you go to will have, you know, their bar with the karaoke night.
You write in the book that Talking Heads, David Byrne and Talking Heads, ahead of the curve as usual, set one of their videos. Is it Wild Wild Life was
yeah.
the song?
Yeah, in 86.
And they set that video in a karaoke bar.
Yeah, it was the first time I ever saw one, and it was a video on MTV, and a whole room full of people sitting at the table, and they get up to sing a line of the song. That was really, really early. That's when karaoke was unknown here.
I remember watching that video, the song Wild, Wild Life by Talking Heads, and not knowing what to call that. I mean, just the word karaoke. By the mid-90s, it's pretty much like a virus, right? It's just infecting one city after another.
a lot of it is movies, just because movies started putting in karaoke scenes because they were really easy to do and really effective. You think about a movie like The Crying Game, which was a sensation in 1992. And the pivotal scene of the movie is at a karaoke bar. And I remember watching that in the theater in rural Virginia at that time and just thinking, wow, that looks awesome.
Rob Sheffield's my guest on Soundcheck. The new memoir is called Turnaround Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. You do also write in one chapter about a guy who is actually paid to karaoke.
Yes.
Now, is that a good thing? I mean, isn't that kind of like against what karaoke is supposed to be?
I have to say, it shocked me when I heard about it. It was, you know, it was like finding out that
there was Mickey, no Santa Claus.
It's like finding out that Mickey Mouse at Disney World, that it's a guy inside a mouse costume. He does it in a bar when the action gets a little slow and they want to sort of break the ice. That's my friend's cue to go into action, and he'll get up and do one of his songs. He'll do Beyonce or Salt and Pepper, and people look at him and they say, hey, that looks easy. If he can do it, I can do it.
If you, Rob, can do it and will be doing it on, I mean, your version of a book tour for this book will involve you not just reading but actually doing some karaoke, right?
Hopefully, yes. I'm looking forward to that.
Rob Sheffield will be at the Powerhouse Arena on Tuesday, 7 p.m. One of the things that you also write about in the book is in your day job as a writer for Rolling Stone, you often will ask musicians, great and small, about their karaoke experiences. I don't do that regularly here, but it has come up in conversation, and I've found that a lot of musicians actually have not ever done karaoke, especially like lead singers and stuff. You seem to have had a whole different range of experiences with musicians answering that question.
Yes. For some reason, it's funny, it seems to be actors and comedians who have the most intense karaoke experiences because they're used to doing their thing in front of a crowd, but they're not used to sort of getting to choose the performance. Like the spontaneity of karaoke is something that, you know, is exciting for them. And it's something that I will bring up in an interview just because, you know, it sort of snaps them out of their canned interview shtick, and you know, they get really excited. A few years ago, I was interviewing some of the members of the cast of Glee and hearing their karaoke stories, and they were kids, you know, playing singers on a TV show, but it was really exciting for them to talk about this one strip mall they go to where they have a great karaoke night. And it's just funny that that amateur passion is at the heart of every performer, I think.
Mm-hmm. Robert Plant is one sort of big name who gives you an interesting answer to the karaoke question.
Yeah, Robert Plant, he told Rolling Stone this great story about singing karaoke in China, and he said, I'm going to bring down the house, because nobody recognized him or had heard of him, and he did Elvis, It's Now or Never, but he got beaten by a guy singing Tony Orlando, Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree. Robert Plant said, what? How did I lose to Tony Orlando? But that's the beauty of karaoke, is that you can't bring your name or your reputation in there.
Is it a contact sport? I mean, are there nights where winners are declared and everyone else goes home empty-handed?
Yeah, there's a whole competitive karaoke scene, which is not my vibe. That's not why I get involved in it. But people love that sort of aspect of it, the sort of combat aspect of it.
Mm. I guess, you know, as a karaoke agnostic, I've always thought of karaoke as people singing Don't Stop Believin', and possibly living on a prayer. So I was kind of stunned to read like chapter 4 or 5 in your book, which is all about don't stop believing and living on a prayer. Yeah. Those are in fact like the two most common karaoke songs.
They are. So some nights you go and you'll just hear those songs over and over again.
Yeah, see, that's not for me.
I hear you. I hear. One of my favorite places in the world to do it is down in Florida, where my parents have a bungalow in a age-qualified community. So it's basically a bunch of seniors who are all, you know, their Wednesday night karaoke night. They take it very seriously. They show up. They're all doing songs from the 40s and 50s. And they have loved these songs longer than I've been alive.
Wow.
And it is really just, you know,
awe-inspiring. Have you ever done that?
Yes. I was there a few months ago, and I got up to do some Dean Martin.
Wow.
I did Everybody Loves Somebody Sometime. And it's funny because I usually don't get nervous singing karaoke, but I thought, these people, they are so hardcore into it, and it's not a competitive vibe. They just love it.
Now, see, you know, if you gave me a chance to sing 16 Tons by Tennessee Ernie Ford, that's a karaoke night I might go for.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
So, Rob Sheffield, what is your karaoke jam?
You know, I have to say, Young Americans by David Bowie is always my favorite song to do, just because it's complicated. It's got a lot of words, but you know, and it tells a story. You get into it. People, they all know how to sing along with the "All Night She Wants," right. Young American, and so it's fun for everybody to sing along to, even if you're the only guy in the room who knows the words.
But you know that the last verse, not the chorus, the last verse, a lot of words in there.
A lot of words,
and almost like a patter song. They come really fast.
Yes, it's a challenge.
You ain't a pimper, you ain't a horse. A pimp's got a carry and a lady got a grace. Pimp's got the stack, weight's got a soul train. Mama's got cramps and look at your hands, hey.
Young Americans from David Bowie. You can hear my guest Rob Sheffield singing his karaoke version of Young Americans. Do you have like a favorite place in New York where you can usually be found doing karaoke?
I love all the places in Koreatown, like Ding Dong Dang and Music Story, and I love Sing Sing and the East Village and all these places where, you know, there's no frills in the decor. There's nothing ritzy about it. It's a place where people go because they need a fix of that transcendent karaoke experience.
It's funny you use the word fix because, you know, reading this book, you, Rob Sheffield, and your wife, Allie, who you meet through karaoke, sound like you're pretty addicted to this stuff.
Yes, it's
and you use the language of addiction, you know, hitting rock bottom because it really rocks, you know, et cetera.
There's an element of that. Just the experience, again, if you go all the way to adulthood, loving music and loving musicians, but not being a musician, and you find something that lets you participate in music as an active performer, that's, I mean, that's a real thrill, and it is very addicting.
All right, so let me ask you a final question, and it may seem like a silly question for something that's been around for 20 years and has been hugely popular, but do you see this as maybe a long-standing trend, but a trend nonetheless, or is this something that's kind of here to stay, and this is part of human music-making from now on?
I think, like you said, part of human music-making, I think it's here to stay. It's something that now little kids grow up doing. My nieces and nephews do the Wii karaoke. They have that on their video games. And they love to do songs from the 70s that my sisters and I thought were long gone, like with our childhood. Like Copacabana is one of those songs. My nieces and nephews, who are like little kids, they act out these dance routines to Copacabana, Dust in the Wind. They love that one.
Oh,
Sister
God.
Christian. All these like old songs that we think of as, you know, like centuries, these are new to them because like they get to sing these songs and perform these songs.
Well, Rob Sheffield's book is called Turn Around Bright Eyes, and he will be doing a reading and possibly a little karaoke Tuesday night, 7 p.m. at the Powerhouse Arena in Brooklyn and in various other stops along the way in his book tour. The title, Turn Around Bright Eyes, comes from?
Total Eclipse of the Heart. It's one of the great karaoke jams.
For two people, right?
Yes. And it's funny because you really need two people. One person does the turnaround part, and the other person does the more vocally challenging part. And my wife and I, we'll trade that off.
I like when you say the turnaround part has three notes and you're blowing five of them. Rob Sheffield, great to have you back with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks so much, John.
Up next, the Soundcheck staff weighs in with some karaoke do's and don'ts. And later, one of the many projects of Stephen Merritt, best known for fronting the Magnetic Fields, will get an in-studio visit from his electronic pop project, Future Bible Heroes. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. So, our conversation with Rob Sheffield has us thinking about karaoke. And we want you to tell us about your karaoke experience, good and bad. We might use your story on the air. Call us at 866-939-1612 or post it on our website, soundcheck.org. Again, that's 866-939-1612. And to get things started, here's a couple of examples from two members of the Soundcheck staff, Katie Bishop and Joel Meyer. Am I the only person on the staff who is not a karaoke fiend?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely, John.
All right. Now, each of you will offer up a go-to song and a no-go song. Katie has been very cagey about her selections and has told us nothing in advance. And since here at Soundcheck we believe in transparency, Joel, that means we start with you.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. I'm going to pick the song Hunger Strike by Temple of the Dog. I don't know, John, if you know Temple of the Dog, this is the grunge supergroup.
Chris Cornell from Soundgarden.
And Eddie Vedder from
Pearl Jam.
This is a song tailor-made for like a bro duet. You have to find another guy to do this with you.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
It could happen. You never know.
No, it won't.
The different singers that are in my wheelhouse that I consider in my same vocal range and intellectual equals, Eddie Vedder is one of them, along with Jim Morrison and David Bowie.
Wow.
But the issue with this song is you have to find a friend who is willing to sing the Chris Cornell part, which is basically the first minute of the song. And then if you've seen the video, Eddie Vedder makes a really dramatic entrance at about 1 minute, 5 seconds, and he also happens to be inexplicably in a wheat field. And so when you're
This is your karaoke moment.
This is my karaoke moment. I like to sort of stand outside the private karaoke room waiting for the line and then open the door and make the entrance.
Wow.
All right. So this is that moment in the song.
I'm going hungry.
Temple of the Dog.
Huge cheers. Huge cheers when that happens. It brings the house down every time.
Hunger Strike is Joel Meyer's go-to karaoke jam. Katie, can you top that?
I don't know if I can top it, but I have my own special karaoke jam. So Rob Sheffield was telling us, he wrote in the book, he gets slutty and noisy when
yes.
he does karaoke. I get sassy and disdainful. And there is nothing that is sassier or more disdainful than a woman who has been wronged or who believes she is being wronged. And
you're not going to sing a Miranda Lambert song
No, I'm not going in that direction. But at the same time, I'm also very impressed by people who can pull off the karaoke rap. There's nothing that impresses me more than someone who, like, knows their rap jams.
Ah, many a downfall.
It's a total, it could be a huge downfall. Track. Exactly. But it's very impressive when people can pull it off. So the song that I feel embodies all of this the best is Destiny's Child, Say My Name.
No one is around you. Say, baby, I love you. If you ain't running game, say my name, say my name. You acting kind of shady. Ain't calling me baby. Better say my name.
Other day, I would call, you would say, baby, how's your day? But today, it ain't the same. Every other word is a huh, yeah, okay. Could it be that you are at the crib with another lady? If you took it there.
So, Katie, you do both the singing and the rapping.
Yes, you have to do both. It's also a great song to do with a friend.
like the bachelorette party that was in the room next door to mine.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
All right. I'm going to have to start going to these karaoke bars when I know that you guys are going to be there, because I have to see this for myself. All right. But there is the potential for public humiliation and pratfallery. I just made that word up.
Pratfallery, on my part, happens when I selected Smooth Operator by Sade, a song that I had just sort of rediscovered, you know, like a few years ago. I was like, I love this song. It's so 80s. It's got the great 80s sax in it. And then I thought I knew the words to the song. I think that Rob talked about this a little bit earlier on the show.
Doesn't the screen give you the lyrics?
Oh, it does. But I had no idea that Sade's, like, vocal melodies were as complex as they are. I have no idea how this song goes. And it was that line, John, that was my downfall. Now, the line goes, coast to coast, L.A. to Chicago, Western Mail. All right, which doesn't really make a lot of sense, but that's the line. I was the victim of a Mondegreen in which not only did I sing this song poorly and do that sort of embarrassed shuffle back over to the remote to hit next and whatever, but I had to reveal to my friends that I thought it was coast to coast, L.A. to Chicago, Western Maine.
Oh.
Because he's so cosmopolitan, the Smooth Operator, that he would travel from L.A. to Chicago, and then for some reason he'd go to the, like, yeah, the Canadian border.
Jackman, Maine.
Yeah. That was like a fodder for a lot of humiliation that evening.
All right. Katie, the mysterious Katie Bishop, once again not sharing beforehand, so what's your karaoke no-go?
Well, I have some trouble at karaoke bars because the books are filled with a lot of songs that I am not that familiar with. I'm not familiar with a lot of songs, as I'm sure you know, but...
That's why we hired you, Kate.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I'm one of the younger people on the staff, so it can sometimes be hard for me. But when I see a song that I do know or I think I know, I get, you know, I'm like, oh, this is perfect. This is great. So I thought, similar to Joel, I thought that I really knew Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody. Like, doesn't everybody know that song? Mm-hmm. It's got the rousing chorus. It's a really hard song to sing. One, because it starts with a bunch of nonsense vocalization that you feel like you're supposed to do, but you really don't know how it goes. And I didn't know any of the words except for the chorus, so I had kind of embarrassing.
But now, again, isn't
this.
There a screen in front of you giving you the words?
There is, but I just didn't know how they fit into the song that well. It just wasn't good.
I think Whitney and Sade share something in common, which is it's harder to... They make it sound easy.
They do.
And then when you suddenly are in their shoes... In a small room in K-Town here in Manhattan, it becomes far more difficult than
anything. Yeah, they never let you see them sweat. Doesn't sound so hard. I got yeah, woo, hey yeah.
Don't forget the
woo-ha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on the screen, that's all it says. It just says, like, whoo, and then you have to go like, whoo.
All right, Soundcheck listeners, don't let Joel and Katie be the only ones embarrassing themselves with the sordid details of their karaoke lives. Tell us about your karaoke victories and defeats. Call us at 866-939-1612. Or post them for all the world to see at soundcheck.com. www.thebeatles.org. All right, Joel, Katie, I've lost all respect for both of you. Back into the control room with you.
Thank you, John.
Up next, an in-studio performance from Future Bible Heroes, the electropop duo led by Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields. This is Soundcheck.
All I care about.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, we're joined in the studio by Future Bible Heroes, the synth-pop ensemble that has just released a new album called Party Going. It's the group's first full-length release since 2002, and it is once again filled with words and melodies from Stephen Merritt, who you might know from his work with the band Magnetic Fields. In a moment, we'll talk with Stephen and two other Bible heroes, singer Claudia Gonson and electronic composer Chris Ewan. But first, the whole band is here, and we're going to hear a song. Claudia Gonson on lead vocals on this one. It's called Living, Loving, Party Going. It's Future Bible Heroes, live on Soundcheck.
Over the top, the fireworks.
That is live music in the Soundcheck studio from the band Future Bible Heroes. The song's called Living, Loving, Party Going, and featured lead vocals by Claudia Gonson, who also played the recorder.
Sort of.
Well, I mean, that is how you play the recorder, yes. Is sort of,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Chris Ewan playing keyboards and electronics, Shirley Sims on ukulele and backing vocals, Anthony Kaczynski playing guitar, more backing vocals. Stephen Merritt sat that one out. He'll sing the next song. He'll do the lead vocals on the next tune, also playing ukulele. The band is Future Bible Heroes. Now, Stephen, let me start with you, because I've lost track of how many times, the first time you were on Soundcheck, it was probably more than a decade ago, and every time you've come on, I've introduced you as Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields, the Gothic Archies, and the Future Bible Heroes, and lately I've been thinking, why do I even say Future Bible Heroes? It's been like 10, 11, 12 years. Clearly, the band is not active anymore. And now,
well,
lo and behold.
Your mistake, I guess.
Absolutely.
Here we are to prove you wrong. And on your own show.
On my own show.
How humiliating that must be for you.
And now I'm going to talk to someone else.
That's what you think.
Chris, what is the division of labor in Future Bible Heroes? Because Claudia and Stephen are both in Magnetic Fields. You're the one that makes it not Magnetic Fields, makes it Future Bible Heroes.
Yeah, and in the past, our division of labor was really specific, where I would create all the musical tracks, send them to Stephen, and then he would write his vocal melodies and lyrics kind of around or through whatever I had done. So this time around, the process was a lot more collaborative, and the lines were blurred a bit.
Mm.
I would send him some demos of pieces. Stephen would come up with lyrical ideas, flesh them out a bit, suggest arrangement ideas to me, how he wanted, say, the structure of the song to go. And then I would do a complete version of the track, send it back to him, and then we'd change everything and start again. And it was a really, really creative and wonderfully involved process for both of us. And Claudia...
In other words, we used to be the Smiths and now we're the early Beatles.
It's been 11 years since the last record. You would expect that things would have changed and that the process might evolve. Stephen, were you surprised at how this record came together and how it turned out?
Well, I wasn't surprised because I was the one doing it. So, no, I was... mutilating everything that Chris did and turning it into little bits to be rearranged. Mm-hmm. And then Claudia sang over the top.
Right.
Like so.
I feel like what really changed was the technology.
Because
I feel like, it would have been harder 10 years ago because they kept having to physically go to the U.S. Postal Service and mail things to each other in Boston and New York where they were respectively living.
Oh, and okay. That
kind of
technology.
Where they still respectively live. Yeah. So now it's like 5 minutes later, zip, it's in your heart,
right.
It's in your inbox.
And theoretically.
Theoretically. And there's also that magnificent thing called the telephone, or I guess we had that 10 years ago too. But anyway, they can talk and say, change that. It just feels a little bit more like the technology helped aid the collaborative process.
The reason I sounded a little surprised when you said technology is, listening to this Future Bible Heroes record, it is sort of determinedly and maybe even defiantly lo-fi for a type of music, that we associate with a kind of disco sheen,
That would be my influence, I'm afraid.
And our keyboards are actually not, am I right? They're vintage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely are using some older gear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, Claudia, in addition to singing, you also kind of manage the band and have to do so while also managing a 3-year-old. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's got to make touring really complicated.
I am tired today. Today I am officially tired.
It's been pretty festive.
We've been talking about the drag queen solution to eye bags.
Which is what?
I'm not sure that we can say this brand name on the radio.
Oh, I think I know this.
Yes.
I'm not going to say how.
It's
but
a cream.
Yes. It's Preparation H, right?
It is Preparation
H. Yeah.
Apparently it really deals well and effectively with the eye bag, which today I could definitely use.
Yeah. Well, clearly
It has all sorts of uses for the traveling musician.
All right, now,
or drag queen, or both.
Now, Stephen, you did not play on the first song, and in fact, you're not on much of this tour. It's an ear issue, right? The loud songs. The band is plugged in.
In this case, a series of ear issues. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, for you, your appearances with the band now are kind of limited to these small acoustic numbers, right?
Yes.
Did that in any way affect the making of the record?
No.
So you were able...
Records and live music have nothing to do with each other.
Mm.
And I think that the next time I make a record, it will have even less to do with each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially with electronic music, you know, things that are created in the studio, you know, can be an extremely different experience from what happens live.
I've always felt that electronic music live was a mistake, as you can see. And...
says Stephen, sitting at the piano holding a ukulele.
Yes. Music is something that should be created in a studio by studio musicians, and live music is an oxymoron.
Hmm. How do you guys feel about that? Claudia? Chris?
I'm about to demonstrate how horrible folk music is.
Stephen has never had the most positive approach feelings about performing live. For this band, we did have a big conversation about how we would do it live, because unlike when we toured 15 years ago or whatever it was, 150 years ago, where we had to have like 15 very large, heavy synthesizers on stage, all of which would break at some point, now we had the reverse problem, which is we could have easily just taken an iPad, stuck it in the middle of the stage and stood there. But we actually, thanks to Chris, kind of met in the middle, and we're all, you know, we have an electric guitar, we have a ukulele, we have a really fascinating little instrument that is actually Stephen's, we borrowed from him, called an omnichord. It's an electronic auto harp. And then we have a bunch of gear from Chris's home studio. So we're kind of trying to show our abilities as musicians at the same time as...
And the songs on the record that Stephen sings, who sings those live?
Tony here.
Tony does. Yeah. Okay.
And Shirley sings one too.
Yeah, okay. we spread all the vocals.
All right. Yeah. We're speaking with and listening to Future Bible Heroes. The new album is called Party Going. Stephen Merritt is going to perform this next song. And Stephen, for this one, we're going to go back into the back catalog of the band, right?
Yes. This is from the EP of the name of the song, I'm Lonely and I Love It.
It's Stephen Merritt of Future Bible Heroes, live on Soundcheck.
I'm lonely and I love it. Woe is me, but I'm above it. It's the strangest thing, I'm sad and I don't care. And I'm dancing on air. I miss you and I like it. Show me a mountain and I'll hike it. It's a whole new feeling, never felt before. Get me to the dance floor. I'm as lonely as an eagle and I'm crazy as a loon. Who would ever think I could get over you so soon? I should be singing the blues, but I just want to croon. Winter is still with us, but I'm dancing like it's June, because I'm lonely and I love it. It's been rough, but I'll rough it. If that's how it feels to get your heart broken, break my heart again. I'm as lonely as Narcissus.
Narcissus gazing in his mirrored pond, wearing all the clothes you hate and going back to blonde, staying up all hours in my seedy demimonde. If you have something to tell me, please don't correspond, because I'm lonely. I'm lonely, and I love it. If only I dreamed of it, I'd have broken up with you so long ago, you wouldn't even know. I'm as lonely as an emperor upon a golden throne, going off my diet with a double chocolate cone, shouting from the rooftops and through every telephone. All the time I've been with you, I wish I'd been alone, because I'm lonely as Mount Everest and probably as high. It's time to buy the records you would never let me buy. It's time to try the million things you never let me try. I can almost laugh at all the times you made me cry, because I'm lonely and I love it.
That is Stephen Merritt, solo, from the Future Bible Heroes songbook, going back a few years for that one, from 2002. I'm Lonely and I Love It. That was the name of the EP. And now, all of the Future Bible Heroes LPs and EPs have all been collected in this box set, which actually strings together the titles of the three LPs. Memories of Love, Eternal Youth, and Party Going. It's almost, Stephen, it's almost as if you had planned this over the course of 12 or 13 years, because those three titles make a neat title.
Shh. Planned. Nothing is planned. We are spontaneous.
But the idea of Memories of Love, Eternal Youth, and Party Going, you know, that kind of fits with Claudia, with the sort of the party theme of the band over the years.
And the sort of sad, nostalgic twinge of the band, too.
And it's, you know, I'm lonely.
And how youthful we are.
Of course. And the idea of being lonely and loving it is sort of echoed in one of the newer songs. Love is a Luxury I Can't Afford. Is that the name of the title? Yes. Oh,
yes. Love is a Luxury
I can no longer afford. Yeah. So,
which is a common sentiment nowadays.
But there's a lot of kind of darkness around the edge of the dance floor in this band. I mean, you got songs about... Yes, you're welcome. Songs about death and drinking. And one in particular that I want to ask you guys about is towards the end of the album, Drink Nothing But Champagne has the single worst David Bowie impression I have ever heard.
Thank you.
So we asked David Bowie, and Bowie said,
it's true, and he said it, I believe it, and so should you. That's the one.
Is that you, Stephen?
Yeah.
Brilliantly done.
I was trying for the David Bowie period epitomized by the Laughing Gnome.
Right, so the 1960s Anthony Newley style,
yes.
David Bowie.
Yes.
Yeah,
Slightly sped up.
And the Aleister Crowley, also you?
Yes.
And so we dug up Aleister, he has a shroud as well. He said,
we don't have water in our ninth circle of hell, so we
drink nothing but champagne. It makes life shorter.
So the idea of drinking nothing but champagne, keeping your kids sedated through their difficult teen years, I mean, you know, there's a lot of really bad advice on this record.
Thank you.
I think we look at it more as we're delivering practical advice. And our nice, it's the Future Bible's how-to program.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, since I've written it, I've become aware of just how many drugs kids are on nowadays. It's nothing like when I was little. My mother was a hippie. We weren't allowed to be on legal drugs.
Right. Now you have to be on legal drugs. No, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you're pretty much court-ordered to be on legal drugs. Yeah.
Party Going is the name of the new record. The box set that brings together all of Future Bible Heroes music is called Memories of Love, Eternal Youth, and Party Going. And guys, thank you all so much for coming in and playing for us. Great to have you back and great to hear the new record.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
By the way, folks, this is just the tip of the iceberg. On our website, you can hear more music and conversation with Future Bible Heroes, and you can watch 3 in-studio videos that we've shot as well. It's all on our website, soundcheck.org. Tomorrow on the show, the blues rock group Moreland and Arbuckle traveled all the way from Kansas to rattle the walls of our studio, hear them play songs from 7 Cities, a concept record about the Spanish explorer Coronado and his journey to the area around their hometown of Wichita. And we'll talk with 2 musicians leading a project called Beatmaking Lab. They're bringing small portable studios to communities all around the world. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Rick Kwan, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn with Alex Kappelman and Amy Pearl. Our digital producer is Mike Katziff. Our interns are Alex Martinez and Ian Petrarca. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. That does it for tonight's show. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.